So when I said velvet, start fucking.
Hello.
Wait. How does that go? At least he got the fuck ups out of the way early.
I see.
Oh, fuck, I set on the dog's goal.
From the burning mesas of the Arizona desert to the slot machine clad boardwalks of New Jersey, it's the Imaginarium with Scott and Todd. I'm Scott Colbert.
And I'm the horror nerd, Todd Starooch.
And I believe for the first time in our history, the illustrious history of the Imaginarium, we are recording on my birthday.
I do believe you're right.
Because usually we're on a summer hiatus, and that made me realize, you know what? We haven't had a summer hiatus.
No.
But, huh. Yeah, but we've been so spotty, it almost feels like a
yeah, exactly. Exactly. We may as well. But yeah. Anyway, happy birthday.
Well, thank you. I'm now closer to 60 than I've ever been, and that just does not seem possible.
Hmm.
obviously it's possible because I am. It's 58 for those wondering, and it's just 2 years away from 60, and that's really. I mean, we talk about being old farts now, but once you reach 60, that's really old fart territory.
Yeah, I'll probably concur.
You won't when you reach it. You'll say, 60, it's the new 40.
Maybe.
Maybe. Yeah, and I'll say, 6 inches is the new 9 inches.
Well, hey, I'm not as angry and bitter as you are yet, but I'm sure I will get there.
Well, you're pretty close. That's what happens from living in Jersey.
Yeah, it has a way of aging you.
It does. So I had my left eye, the cataract surgery on my left eye yesterday, and that went well. And it's still, vision is still blurry in that eye, which, you know, it's to be expected, according to the doctor. I didn't quite remember my right eye being that blurry, but honestly, my right eye was so bad that anything would have been an improvement, so it's really kind of hard to compare the two. But still, you know, no pain, no discomfort. There's a little discomfort yesterday, because it always feels like you've got something in your eye.
Mm.
But everything went well. I'm just glad that I never have to have it done again.
Knock on wood.
Well, no, cataracts don't grow back. So.
Oh, okay. That shows you what I know. I thought it was something that could come back.
Well, I was curious about that. So after my first surgery, I Googled it, and that's when I found that out. That cataracts, once you get cataract surgery, that's it. Now, you some of the side effects from cataract surgery may come back, you know. Mm. I'm like, well, you know, you take the good, you take the bad.
Yes. Yes. You know, it's funny. My dad had cataract removal literally like days apart from you, like 2 days before, you know, and he just had his other eye done a few days ago, you know, and he did really well, to the point where he said everything was so bright now that he had to get like prescription sunglasses, you know,
yeah,
because he's not used to seeing everything, you know, so brightly, you know?
Yeah, that's what surprised me. After I had the first surgery, I was surprised by just how bright everything looked. You know, when I look at the monitor when I'm in Word or something like that, it seems almost too white. But when I just, you know, I close my right eye and look at it with my left, there seemed to be like a yellow film over it.
Mm.
And I, yeah, and that's gone now. But everything is brighter. But what's it also? The future's so bright, I gotta wear shades.
Yeah. Damn,
well, I forgot about that. The future's so bright because we're old fucking men.
Yeah.
That's my song.
I forgot about that that song. That was like a huge hit for a while.
Yeah. Timbuktu3.
Timbuktu3, that's right. They were like a one-hit wonder.
Yeah, that's exactly what it was. And why do I remember? There is absolutely no reason that would ever come up in a conversation anywhere in my entire life ever again. Yet I hold on to the useless information of Future So Bright, I Gotta Wear Shades was done by Timbuktu3. Can't remember my keys.
No.
Can't remember if I took my pills.
So, of course, I had to look them up. I had no idea, right? Timbuktu3 was an American rock band which released 6 original studio albums between 1986 and 1995. 6 albums. Who would have fucking guessed it?
Hi. That is a surprise to me.
I agree.
That had to have been their only number one hit.
Let's see. Yeah. Well, there was a couple of Life is Hard went to number 35 in 1987. And yeah, that's about it.
Yeah.
I have no idea. I know. I don't even remember that. I don't remember any song other than Future So Bright.
Yeah, because that came out around the same time as, I think, Corey, what's his face's song?
Sunglasses at Night.
Sunglasses at Night, yeah.
So what is this? Oh, it's funny. So on their Wikipedia page, right, it's obviously pretty brief. And then you get to the bottom and it says, see also list of 1980s one-hit wonders. Okay. They were out of Madison, Wisconsin.
Well,
Madison, Wisconsin's big claim to fame.
Wikipedia is being a bit salty these days.
Wow. Huh, look at that. Wow. Timbuktu3. I would never in my lifetime, I think, have thought of that band ever again until you just said that.
Well, leave it to me, the font of useless knowledge.
Yes.
That's going to be the title for my next book. That should be my autobiography, The Font of Useless Knowledge.
Hold on. New show idea topic. Favorite one hit wonders. Okay.
Oh, there's a ton of those.
Yeah, there are.
The 70s was filled with.
That'll be fun. That'll actually be fun to talk about. So this
is on the list that you've got on Google.
I will. The list that we never ever refer back to again.
Yeah, that one. Yeah,
okay, I'll put it there. So for some reason, under the see also on their Wikipedia page, it has a link to Grammy Award for Best New Artist. And I'm like, get the fuck out of here. Like, there's no way that they were Best New Artist. And the, yeah, no, they weren't even, they were nominated for it and lost to Bruce Hornsby and The Range.
Well, at least Bruce Hornsby had a few more hits than they did.
Yeah.
And they were actually a really good band. I like Bruce Hornsby.
Me too. I saw them a couple times. I did like them. So I know now, I picked up
their tape.
I'm in this rabbit hole is, oh, let's look at the Grammy Award for Best New Artist. I'm like, oh my God, I'll be doing this forever. Cyndi Lauper in 1985. Yeah, you... Culture Club in 1984. Huh.
And so and they've lasted. Culture Club is still performing.
They are. They a friend of mine just saw them and said they were really good.
And Cyndi Lauper is still performing.
Mm-hmm. So, okay. So apparently the Grammy Award for Best New Artist began in 1960. Who do you think was, take a, just a wild stab at who was the very first recipient of the a Grammy for Best New Artist?
I mean, I know you were a little kid then, so you probably remember that. But.
Hey, wait, you're older than me. 1960.
I'm going backwards in time. I have no idea. I would say the Beatles, but I think that's too early for the Beatles.
Yep.
The Rolling Stones.
The Beatles got it in 1965. The first recipient of the Best New Artist Grammy was Bobby Darin.
Yeah, I wouldn't have said that. And I know Bobby Darin, Mack the Knife.
Yep. And the next year is someone in a thousand years you would never, ever guess got a Grammy Award for Best New Artist.
Who?
Bob fucking Newhart.
Yeah, that would
right. No,
ever crossed my mind.
No, and the, yeah,
the Grammy rules were a little bit looser back yeah, then. Apparently,
he is the so this Bob Newhart won for his work as a comedian. The same year, he also won the Album of the Year award. He is the only non-musician to win this award.
And I'm assuming that was for his album, The Button Down Mind of Bob Newhart.
Probably. And then, so like all the rest of them, like in the 70s, yeah, are people you would think, you know, Crosby, Stills, and Nash, The Carpenters, Carly Simon,
yeah,
Natalie Cole.
And Bob Newhart is still alive.
He is.
He's like a 123 or something. He looks like yeah, a Skeletor now, though.
So I'm looking at the recent winners for Best New Artist. And so this year, Samara Joy, I don't know who that is. American jazz singer, okay. Then 2022 was Olivia Rodrigo. I know who that is. 2021 was Megan Thee Stallion. Okay.
I've heard of Megan Thee Stallion. I don't know the other two. But you know, there comes a point, and I know I've said this before on the show, but arts are almost really very generational. And there comes a point where you just stop listening to all the new stuff that's on the radio. You just kind of stop taking an interest in pop music. And not because it's pop music. It's just, it doesn't speak to you anymore. It's when we start going back into nostalgia mode of, oh, you know, the 60s, 70s, 80s had the best music. Today's music sucks. That's when you know you're an adult. Is when you start saying, this music sucks, you know? And so I think that happened for me right around 1992 or 93. It was right around the time Kurt Cobain died. and I just kind of stopped following music other than my favorite bands who would still put out albums at the time.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying, and I kind of feel the same way. So like when I'm looking at the 1990s, right? So 1991, Mariah Carey. Now, I'm not the biggest fan in the world, but the girl's got fucking pipes, you know? I mean,
oh yeah,
you know, absolutely. Toni Braxton, Sheryl Crow. So 1996, Hootie and the Blowfish won for Best New Artist. They were up against Brandy, Alanis Morissette, Joan Osborne, and Shania Twain. Hootie and the Blowfish won out of that group. You know? Like, oh my God. Talk about cheesy pop songs. You know? Like, come on, you know?
Yeah, that's...
that one, when you go up, like, if you're Alanis and you lose out to Hootie and the Blowfish, do you immediately start questioning your musical career, or...
Yeah, you know, and... But Alanis has the last laugh. I mean, she had a show on Broadway. What about
Hootie? Yeah, and well, and she's still touring. You know, people... My boss went to see her a couple of weeks ago.
Jagged Little Pill is the classic of the, it's a classic album.
Period. Oh, it's fucking awesome. My daughter loves that album. So the 2000s, not bad. So Christina Aguilera, Alicia Keys, Norah Jones, 2004 Evanescence. I'm like, thank God, fucking rock and roll. Carrie Underwood, Adele. And then we get to the 2010s and I'm like, Esperanza Spalding, who is that? Bon Iver? No clue. Meghan Trainor?
Bon Iver sounds vaguely familiar, but I couldn't.
So, Chance the Rapper? What? Okay. And like I said, last year, so in 2023, this year, Samara Joy, I don't know anybody who was nominated except for Måneskin, who's an Italian band. Anita, Omar Apollo, Lotto, Mooney Long, Molly Tuttle, and Wet Leg. Okay. But dude, I don't even knock, like, just because I don't know who these people are doesn't mean they're not good. Like Wet Leg is a British indie rock group from the Isle of Wight. Okay, maybe they're good. I don't know. I should ask my daughter. My daughter knows everything about indie guitar rock bands. So she probably knows who they are. So
I bet you she does.
I'm not a, like, oh, modern music sucks kind of guy. Like, you just have to look for it. Like, nobody says you have to listen to Cardi B, you know?
Yeah, yeah. The only recent Best New Artist group that I know was Greta Van Fleet. I won it a couple of years ago.
They did not. I'm looking at it right here. Who did they lose to, you may ask?
I thought they won.
Hold on. I just saw it. No, they lost out in 2019 to Dua Lipa. Yeah, I happen to love Greta Van Fleet. That's like my daughter's favorite current band is Greta Van Fleet.
I really do like them too, and I really like their new album, Starcatcher.
So when they first came onto the scene, people were complaining that they were derivative of Led Zeppelin. And my first thought was...
And people still fucking say that.
Well, and you know what? So fucking what? If you're a band and people say you are reminiscent of Led Zeppelin, okay. And, you know, you could do a lot worse.
Really?
You know? Like,
yeah, you could be called, you know, reminiscent of Hootie and the Blowfish.
Right, reminiscent of Milli Vanilli. You know? Like, yeah, my daughter gets so sick of that. She's like, every band is influenced by some other band, and you can hear it, you know, in the music, you know. Shit, Elvis ripped off every, you know, black blues musician who ever lived, you know. So, I mean, are we really going to play that game, you know? Fucking Greta Van Fleet, they're just like Led Zeppelin. Like, okay, well, Zeppelin's not around anymore. So if you want new music, you have to find bands that sound like them, you know?
Yeah. Oh my God. And it's just so refreshing to hear actual rock and roll music anymore.
Right? Good old fashioned guitar rock.
Yeah. You know, it's a breath of fresh air. And, you know, I'm not always crazy about the lead singer's voice, but for the most part, I really do like it. I just can't picture them doing, like, you know, their 50th anniversary tour and him still trying to hit those high notes like he does now.
Yeah.
They are not a band that will age well when it comes to, you know, less farewell concerts. they should just probably be all instrumental by then.
Mm.
But yeah, if you haven't heard Starcatcher, check it out. I have not
heard the new record yet. Like I said, I'm sure my daughter has, because she's all over it. Now I'm just fascinated by this list. More so, like, who people lost out to, you know. Some of them I'm like, okay, you know, and then others I'm like, hmm. So in 1979, A Taste of Honey won, and the other nominees were The Cars, Elvis Costello, Chris Rea, and Toto.
Holy shit. That was a good year for music.
Yeah. So,
I would have put my money on Toto for that one.
Yeah, it's another Cars. So yeah, it's just sometimes these things are just fascinating.
I think they just throw a dart at a board and just to figure out who's going to win that year.
Yeah, I mean, music, like you said, musical tastes change. Like when you go back in time, it's a lot of. There was a lot more rock bands that were best new artist. America, Men at Work, Culture Club. And then it became more like individual and, you know, singer-songwriter. And then it became more like pop, you know. Although this Samara Joy is Grammy Award-winning American jazz singer. Named Best New Artist by Jazz Times. So I might have to check her out. I like some smooth jazz. So,
yeah. Well, you do that. Let me know if it's worth listening to.
I will.
You can be the guinea pig.
I will have to.
All right. So we have just spent 25 minutes talking about shit nobody cares about.
Well, and you were worried about what are we going to talk about today, and I'm like, oh, we will find a rabbit hole to go down. That's for sure.
Well, no, I wasn't.
And by we, I mean
worried. I know we're worried. Yeah.
So.
Because I know we always manage to talk about shit. But it's always nice to have that one leaping off point. So to get us into that rabbit hole. It's one thing to go down the rabbit hole. It's quite another to find the hole in the first place. Which actually is probably another good title for my autobiography, Trying to Find the Hole.
Yes. Oh, my God. At that time, it only
took 29 minutes.
Yeah, it only took 23 minutes, 19 seconds to go off into the ditch. So.
All right. Well, let's get out of that ditch and talk about the big shock. I can't say shocker, big news of the week. And that is one of our favorite directors, William Friedkin, passed away at the age of 87.
Yes, he did.
Yesterday or the day before.
Yeah, just a couple days ago, as we record, it is the 10th, and he passed on August the 7th. Yeah, man, he was always on my, like, people always ask me, Todd, all the autographs you've gotten, all the famous people you met, who's on, like, your top 10, and he was one of them. But he didn't do many public appearances, so I never got the chance to meet him.
No, and that's too bad. But from all the interviews that I've seen with him, that's probably a good idea. He seems a bit crusty.
Yeah, a bit salty, if you will.
I think he would be a lot like Ellison, Harlan Ellison.
Right? You know, you read my mind. I was just going to say that.
Because I just saw an interview with him, and he was talking about the difference between Al Pacino and Robert Duvall. And he said, I wouldn't give a flying fuck at a donut about Al Pacino.
Oh, my God.
I think so much of that. But because he was talking about cruising, and he was talking about how Bobby, because he calls Robert Duvall Bobby Duvall was a professional, and he would come to the set prepared every day, and he had all of these wonderful ideas about his character. He really understood the art of acting, and Al Pacino did. I'm like, did he just say that about Al Pacino? Yeah, there's a man who gave very little fucks about what people thought.
100%.
And God damn it, I admire that. I like that. Because everybody else would be kissing Al Pacino's ass. He's like, fuck that guy.
But so, dude, when I heard of his passing, obviously, the first movie that slammed into my brain was The Exorcist. But dude, The French Connection, The Boys in the Band, The Brinks Job, To Live and Die in L.A., like, so Sorcerer. Many. Sorcerer, Blue Chips, so many amazing movies. It's just, it's astonishing.
And he did a film called Bug based on a play.
Mm-hmm.
He actually did two films based on plays from the same playwright who did Bug, and I forget the name of the other one. But Bug was probably one of the most uncomfortable films I've ever watched. I don't know why people don't talk about it as much as people talk about The Exorcist. For me, it has a discomfort level that goes through the roof. It's just, if you haven't seen it, you really need to watch it. It's a good movie, and it's easily probably the best movie that Friedkin had made in the last 30 years.
I saw that movie just because he directed it. You know what I mean? And I wanted to check it out. So the writer is Tracy Letts, who also wrote Killer Joe.
Killer Joe, yeah, that was
the one Woody that Harrelson. Yeah, that Friedkin directed.
Yeah. He's one of those directors that even if the movie is a miss, and you know, he's made a couple of clunkers in his day. They're still far more interesting than a lot of what we see.
Oh, God, yes. You know, and we could do a whole episode just on William Friedkin, just because, like, so many of his movies are classics. I saw an interview where he talked about filming The French Connection, and because it's got one of the most famous car chases in all of cinema. First of all, it's real. Second of all, they did not tell the city that they were doing it.
I love that.
They didn't get permits or anything. They were just like, and go. And let's wreak havoc, you know? But now I wanna do like a William Friedkin retrospective and just watch movies.
It's funny, when I was writing for the Talkback website years ago, and I was doing the articles on John Waters and Terry Gilliam and David Cronenberg and David Lynch, William Friedkin was actually one of the other directors that I was planning on doing a series of essays about. In fact, I think it was between him and Brian De Palma that I was going to do next. They were two of my other favorite directors. But then, you know, the website closed and things happened. But I've still thought about it because he's got a large body of work, but not so much that it would just seem too daunting to do. That's why I think I chose those directors, aside from being my favorites, is, you know, they only had maybe a dozen or so films, you know, each.
Right.
Yeah. So I didn't have a lot of movies to watch. But I may do that with Friedkin. Because we talked about the Exorcist prequel thing last week, and it made me watch The Exorcist the next night. It was time. It was overdue for my watching it this year. And it's just such, I love that movie so much. And here's the really sad part. Max von Sydow was only 46 when he played that role.
Really?
Yeah.
What does he look like?
I am now a decade older than Max von Sydow when he was in The Fucking Exorcist. Now, if that doesn't make you feel old, nothing will.
Yeah, really.
Yeah, but that just goes to show how good the makeup was for his character. 46 to become, I don't know what age he was supposed to be in the movie, but obviously much older than what he was. That was fantastic old age makeup, or older age makeup, I should say.
It's funny, so when that, I was scrolling through my Facebook feed and someone shared the trailer for The Exorcist, the new one, and someone commented, not really looking forward to it. Looks like they're going for, the trailer makes it look like they're going for shock value. And I'm like, yeah, because the original Exorcist had very little in the way of shock value. I mean, you know, like, come on, right? That's the whole point, is that it's shocking. Is it supposed to be a 12-year-old girl, you know, saying all these horrible things and doing unspeakable things, you know? Like, come on.
Nothing will ever be as shocking in a movie ever as the crucifix masturbation scene. And I still wonder how the fuck he was able to get that into an R-rated movie.
Yeah, exactly. Or even just things that are a little more subtle, like when she says, "Do you know what she did? Your cunting daughter." And it's like, yeah. What? You know? Yeah. Or the spider walk. Like when I saw that for the first time in the theater, it's only a couple of seconds, and it really does give you chills.
Yeah, absolutely. But you know what? But I always wondered is because the movie that William Friedkin did before that was The Boys in the Band. And mm-hmm. For those who aren't familiar with it, The Boys in the Band is about a bunch of gay men at a birthday party. And that's literally what it is. It was based on the play by Matt Crowley. And yeah, How does somebody watch The Boys in the Band and think, you know, that director would make a great horror movie? He probably would have been the last on my list of directors to do The Exorcist just based on The Boys in the Band.
Well, dude, I mean, yeah. And, well, look at it in reverse, right? Peter Jackson was known as a schlock movie director.
Oh, yeah.
And they gave him $400 million to make The Lord of the Rings. You know, I remember when that was announced, my friends, because my friends and I are big, big fans of his early work, like Dead Alive and Bad Taste and Meet the Feebles and all that ultra grindhouse stuff. And then we're like, he's directing what? And like my friends and I, who were big Tolkien fans, were skeptical, you know, because we're like, who in the world would think that he would pull that off, you know? And yet he did. So sometimes a movie producer gets it right, I guess.
Yeah. And they certainly get it right with Friedkin, because I couldn't imagine that movie done by anybody else now.
Yeah.
He will be missed. It's not even as if he has been very prolific. I mean, I think the last thing he did was kind of a documentary where he talks to an actual exorcist and he films an actual exorcism. I forget the name of it. I remember I did see it when I heard about it. I had to scout for it in the less savory parts of the internet, but I found it. And it was interesting, but it just really wasn't. It's not what you would expect from Friedkin. And the only thing that I could think, and it was short, it was maybe an hour, 10 minutes at the most. The only thing I could think was, well, I guess, he needed the money.
Yeah. So, rest in peace, William Friedkin.
Yes, yes. He is one of those few artists, and I definitely would call him an artist, who will stand the test of time. You know, 50 years from even now, because The Exorcist is 50 years old, just about. You know, we'll still be talking about that movie. Well, I won't. You and I won't. We'll be maggot lunch by then.
Oh, and one other thing. If you've never seen it, so Friedkin also directed a really good TV, made-for-TV remake of 12 Angry Men.
Oh, yeah, right.
It was really good. It had Ozzie Davis and George C. Scott and James Gandolfini, Jack Lemmon, a whole bunch of awesome people in the cast. So, yeah, I had forgot about that one, and I was scrolling down his Wikipedia page, and I'm like, oh, there it is. So I'm just wanted to drop that one out there.
So I will check that out. I don't think I've seen that version, but I love that play. And I love the original movie of it. Oh. All right, so you saw a movie.
I did. I finally saw Oppenheimer, and it was freaking amazing. I saw it in IMAX, and I'm glad that I did. And one thing that struck me is I saw it on a weekday night, a relatively late movie, and it is 3 hours. So on a weekday night, in IMAX, which is a premium format, the theater was nearly full.
Wow.
So it does my heart good that at the same time as, you know, Barbie makes $1 billion at the box office, Oppenheimer, kind of a geeky, science-y movie, makes $500 million, you know, on half as many screens. So that does my heart good.
Yeah.
And it was really good. It's definitely a Christopher Nolan film. stylistically, like you can just tell. But everybody in it was fantastic. And it really, it tells a historical story in a way that is just very gripping. And it's one of those, like, we all know what happens. You know what I mean? Like, you know, that they ultimately succeed in building the bomb. We ultimately drop it on Japan. And, you know, it's like Titanic, you know, we know the ship sinks, yet that movie made $3 billion at the box. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So just well acted. And then the final third of the movie is what happens later. Like after the bombs are dropped on Japan and Japan surrenders, the war is over, and how Oppenheimer was, very conflicted about what they had done, you know, and how, you know, the political community, you know, went after him, and how he was sort of an outcast for a while. And then towards the end of his life, he wins the Enrico Fermi Award. And there's a really, really great, the ending, you know, is a scene between him, Oppenheimer, and Albert Einstein. And it's just perfect. But everybody in it is amazing. Cillian Murphy as Oppenheimer is fantastic. And Robert Downey Jr. as Louis Strauss was a revelation. I like him to begin with, but he was excellent in this. And his acting and the makeup are so good. And then obviously I knew he was in the movie, but when he's first on, it took me a minute to register that it was actually him. You know, that's how good it is. But
wow.
Yeah, I highly recommend it. Like, if you have a chance to see it in the theater before it's not in theaters anymore, you should.
I may go see it this weekend, actually.
Yeah, just for the, you know, obviously it's not a big action movie or anything, but just to see it in the theater. Like, there are scenes where the sound really plays a key role in the movie, and just to all the little details and stuff. But who would have thought, right? And that's why I thought the whole Barbenheimer thing was fascinating, you know, because they came out at the same time and people made a thing out of it about going to see them both in the same day. Yeah. I didn't get a chance to do that. I would have, you know, just on a lark, but I haven't had a chance to see Barbie yet. I really want to. Because
I'm curious about it too. I do want to see it, but I will wait for it to stream.
Yeah, I'm not in a hurry to see it in the theater, you know, but only because I have the pass, you know, the A-list pass. So yeah. It's not like to pay any extra to go see it. So I might as well. And it's funny, you just go into the theater and you just see a million people dressed in pink, a whole bunch of little kids, you know, at the theater, you know. So that was funny. Yeah, I do want to see Barbie just to see, like, what the hullabaloo is about. That, you know, we've talked about this, Scott. People piss me off. You know, they're like, oh, the right hates this movie. Okay. I have a lot of friends who are conservatives. You know that. Not one of them gives a shit about this movie. They are not up in arms about Barbie. They're not. If anything, they're just indifferent. You know, they speak with their wallet. They're like, oh, I've heard it's feminist or it's woke or whatever. So I'm just going to choose not to go see it. Okay. The problem solved. But what they will do, like what the news media, both the mainstream media and social media will do, is they'll find some, you know, the worst ultra right wing redneck out there to be the spokesperson, you know. Fuck the Barbie movie, you know. I'm going to see that woke bullshit. And that's the guy that they point to and say, see, straight white men hate this movie. It made a fucking $1 billion. So someone other than little kids are going to see it, you know. Hey, come on, man. Life is too short. Just let people enjoy things. If people went to see it and they enjoyed it, let them enjoy it. You know what I mean? Like, who cares?
It's all about getting the hits and getting the attention. And I do blame social media for. And mainstream media just picks up on what's going on social media. You know, they want to appear relevant. And let's be honest, neither mainstream media, quote unquote mainstream media, or social media, anything having to pertain with any of them is relevant anymore. Mainstream media used to be relevant. I think it's lost a lot of that dignity and respect, because people used to respect newscasters, you know, or journalists, people like Walter Cronkite or Edward R. Murrow, going way back.
Yeah.
But, you know, and even at one point, 60 Minutes was just revered, you know, and everybody watched 60 Minutes on Sunday nights, you know, and Dan Rather and all the others, you know, doing these hard-hitting stories.
I'm Leslie Stahl.
Yeah. And Andy, and I'm Andy Rooney. But you don't have that today. I mean, there's not one news anchor that I can think of, or journalist that I can think of, who has that kind of admiration or respect. You know, there is no Walter Cronkite or Sam Donaldson or Ted Koppel anymore. And I know, I think Ted Koppel is still alive, but he's not doing anything.
No, you're 100% right. Even like the local, my parents were big. I think you were still in the New York, maybe in the New York area at that time, but big Eyewitness News was there. Roger.
Yeah, Channel 7.
Roger Grimsby and Bill Butel were the two anchors. And that's who we watched every night, you know?
Yeah, and that's where Geraldo Rivero got his start.
Yep.
Was on Eyewitness News.
Yep.
And so, Joel Siegel.
Yep. Yep. And forget who the weather guy was.
Tex Antoine, before he made that stupid comment about me.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and it's so funny how, like, you look at TV news now, like, Roger Grimsby and Bill Butel were not attractive men. Now, everyone behind the desk, male or female, is a supermodel, you know, absolutely perfect. Even the weather people, the sports people, they're all off the cover of a magazine, you know. I'm like, look at that weather girl. Like, she's a Hawaiian tropic swimsuit model, and I'm supposed to relate to her. Now, hey, look, I'm not questioning her meteorological skills, but it's just something you can notice, you know?
Well, it's to distract you from the actual news that they're reporting, I think.
Probably.
Well, I don't like what they're saying, so at least I can turn it down and beat off to them.
Although Europe started that trend a long time ago. You know what I mean? Like, you look at the weather people, you know, on some of the European or South American stations, you're like, holy shit. You know, like, where did she come from? Oh, I'm being sexist. Send your hate mail to the Imaginarium.
Well, and it's funny because it's because of Eyewitness News to a great extent, and to the Watergate guys. Oh, Jesus. Their names just went right out of my head. The guys who broke Watergate from the Washington Post.
Oh,
Jesus Christ, Scott.
Well, I can't think of it either.
Woodward and Bernstein.
Right. Duh. Bob Woodward and Carl Bernstein.
You know, it's because of guys like those and Grimsby and Butel that I want to become a journalist. That's what I went to college for, was to become a journalist.
No kidding.
Yeah. And that was in 84, so towards the mid-80s. And that was at the time that news was changing. They always had the kind of if it bleeds, it leads type mentality. But that became the focus. The sensationalism started to come in. And that's not something that I was interested in. I was more interested in, you know, the hard-hitting type of journalism, you know, the investigative reporting type stuff that Wood and Bernstein did. And that John Stossel.
John Stossel.
On Channel 7, as well as Harold Rivera. That's what I was interested in. That just wasn't happening as much anymore. And so I went into creative writing. But yeah, it's because of them. That was the ritual. You know, when my dad was home for dinner, you know, if he was working shift where he could be home for dinner, it was always, you know, at the dinner table, but in the TV room, in the den, you know, Channel 7 News would be on. And my dad had the chair where he could look into the room to watch the news. Mom wouldn't let us all eat in the TV room. We had to sit at the dining room table most 95% of the time. But Eyewitness News was always on, and he would watch it, the 11 o'clock edition, before he went to bed. They were like members of the family, and I know people have said that about Cronkite and a few others, but they really felt like, you know, you kind of knew them because you saw them so much, you know. And even as a kid, because I was about 9 when Nixon resigned, and a little bit younger when Watergate broke, I was just fascinated by it. So my hat's off to the old-time journalists. They're not a dying breed. They're a dead breed.
Yeah, man. Well, now, like you said, it's not even about investigation anymore. It's let's be the first to break the story. Even if we get it wrong, no one will care. We will print a retraction or post a retraction and bury it a few days later. You know, we just want to be the first to get that headline out there, you know?
And a lot of them aren't even journalists. You know, they don't have a journalism background. You know, they didn't go through journalism school. They didn't work their way up through a paper. There are a lot of them, certainly not all, but a lot are bloggers, you know, who just call themselves a journalist, but without having any of the credibility to back it up. And that's what's really missing. You know, when people talk about the problems with mainstream media or social media, news posts, it's there's no, we don't know who the fuck these people are. You know, why should we trust what they say? You know, when you saw Cronkite or Grimsby or Butel and they talked about whatever the news story of the day was, I remember them specifically when Eitan Peetz disappeared.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That was some, I just remember them talking about that so much very vividly in The Son of Sam. You believed everything they said because you knew that they weren't going to lie. They may have had their biases, sure, but you trusted them because you knew they had the background. You knew where they came from. And you just don't have that with journalists today. That's just, it's gone.
Did you mention Geraldo Rivera? Do you remember when he had that TV special about Al Capone's vault?
Yep.
And oh, my God.
That's what made him psycho, I believe. That's what turned him into the Fruit Loop that he became.
I think you might be right. Because I will never forget that, man. We were watching at home, and it was going to be like such a big thing. And then what did they find? Like a couple of empty whiskey bottles and like some illegible papers. Like
imagine being Geraldo Rivera though, and having all of that hype going on around the show. And there was a ton of hype around it. And then imagine being humiliated on live TV in front of tens of millions of people worldwide.
Yeah.
That was probably the last time I ever felt sorry for him.
Yeah, now and then he just went off the deep end. Didn't he slap somebody? I don't know. Something weird happened with him.
Yeah,
I don't
even know. He had that talk show for a long time, but it was
yeah.
Kind of like Jerry Springer-ish.
Yeah, the era, the talk show era.
Yeah.
Wow. All right. Well, look at that, dude. We are right up against the end of our time. And we, thank God we wasted 25 minutes of it at the beginning talking about one-hit wonders and other such nonsense.
Yeah, because we may have spent the rest of it talking about Geraldo Rivera's career, and nobody wants to hear that.
Yeah, no, not at all. So what are you up to, other than having laser beams blasted into your eyeballs?
No, not laser beams. They didn't use lasers. They used actual cutting it.
Oh, God, I don't even want to think about that. Yeah, no.
Yeah, I'll spare you the details on that, because even just thinking about how they do it makes my testicles crawl back up inside my body. Well, I'm still working on the book. It is at about, well, I will tell you. Let's see here. A little over 19,000 words now, 19,113 words. And still going strong. I think it has a good possibility of being out maybe by Halloween, or definitely by Christmas. It'll be out this year.
Awesome.
And I'm having fun with it, and it's flowing very smoothly, and that hasn't happened for a while with anything that I've been writing since Errors of the Flesh. Excuse me. So you have that to look forward to this year.
Yeah, I can't wait to not read it and wait for the audio version to come out.
Yeah, right.
Maybe I'll narrate this one. I'll give you the friends and family rate. Only $1 per word.
Oh, gee, what a bargain. All right. But as always, you can still pick up the ebooks wherever ebooks are sold, and you can get the physical copies at Amazon. And as always, the audiobook versions are available at audible.com.
So, me on the creative side, it's has been slow. Just so much going on. I moved my daughter into her college apartment last weekend. So that was a chore. Going back to help her this weekend. So I teased her a little bit. She's like, hey, Dad, can you come this Saturday? Now, the main reason, to be fair, is they're coming to install the internet in her apartment on Saturday. And she's like, ah, Dad, I don't know if I feel comfortable like being alone in the apartment. And I'm like, okay. And then she said, oh, if you're coming anyway, I have my kitchen table and stuff that has to be put together and whatnot. And I'm like, where are these strong, independent women who don't need no man that I've been hearing so much about? You know, I said, you're the progressive one, yet you can't put together a table like from IKEA. Dad,
you're not a kid. You're not a kid. Daddy, stop putting your toys together.
Right. So she's like, you know what, Dad? I knew that was coming eventually, you know? And I said, well, it's kind of true, you know? And I said, but well, here's a little known secret. A lot of times men actually enjoy doing man shit. Like, we like to feel needed, you know? Yeah. So we don't mind fixing something or you know, helping you change the oil on your car or whatever. We like to feel needed. So if you need help in your apartment, that's what I'm here for, you know? But it is funny how we don't need no man until I need to change a tire, you know?
There's a bit of Tim Allen in all of us.
Yes, yes. And ladies, I get it. You are perfectly capable of changing your own tire. Sometimes, though, we would not mind doing it for you, you know, just yeah. as a gentlemanly thing to do. That's all, you know. So that'll be this coming weekend as I'll be helping her. And then classes for her start in 11 days. I'm like, so the weekend immediately before her classes start is New Jersey HorrorCon. And like, she really wanted to go. And she's like, so maybe I'll be able to go on Saturday, because Sunday, the day before classes start, I'll just be sitting on my bed in existential dread. So I'm like, oh, okay, that's my girl.
So. See, and when I, day before I went to college, I was just high.
There you go.
That was the way I coped with it. I smoked pot.
So my daughter doesn't, my daughter's like Daria from Beavis and Butthead. She doesn't want anybody to like know that she's ever excited about anything, but I can tell, you know, she's excited to start this chapter. You know, in her apartment, she's putting everything just so and getting it exactly the way she wants it. And I finally won a battle with my ex. I said, I need you to resist the urge to go to your daughter's apartment and tell her where she should put everything and how she should arrange the furniture. It's her apartment. She needs to live there. You know, let her arrange her kitchen however she wants. It doesn't matter. And she finally, she goes, yeah, you're right. And I'm like, wait a second. What? Hold on. Let me hear you say it again. Let me hear you. First time in 25 years I've heard that. But anyway, that's a long-winded way of me saying getting my daughter into college has been consuming my life for the last month.
Not to mention the bank account.
Lord, please. First tuition bill just came. We got to figure out a way to monetize this show, dude. Either that or I'm starting an OnlyFans page.
Hey, you know, I'm sure you'd make some money. The people who used to like to go to freak shows, I'm sure would pay a lot of money for your OnlyFans.
Listen, I've heard dad bods are in, so that's what I'm that's what I'm sticking with.
So, well, on that note, until next time, may all of your journeys be filled with pure imagination.